Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Esquire Coaching Radio, where we help attorneys achieve unparalleled personal and professional success. And now here's your host, Anne Jenrett Thomas.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Esquire Coaching Radio Show. It's such a pleasure to be here with all of you today. As you know, Esquire Coaching is a national coaching and consulting firm that's dedicated to empowering lawyers to happily succeed in the business of law. To that end, we discuss the full range of topics, building business, to getting a job, to work-life balance, and everything in between. Today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Carrie Jackson, who's going to talk to us about breaking through fear-based decision-making. There are short-sighted, ego-based, anxiety-driven decisions made by leaders in business, community service, faith-based, and government sectors all too often. The adverse long-term impacts of such decisions seen all too often at micro and macro levels have led to operational ineffectiveness, business failures, and economic crises, military aggressions, wars and genocide, irresponsible contribution to climate changes, and a variety of civil rights and human rights violations. It is generally presumed that the best decision leaders need to make are rational decisions. However, the truth is many decisions that are touted as rational are often intellectually framed emotional decisions that undercut a leader's ability to achieve the needed results. To counter this tendency, leaders must be equipped with the emotional skills to make competent, courageous, and compassionate decisions that maximize the best interests for the greatest number of stakeholders. That quote right there, all of that was from Dr. Jackson. And Dr. Carrie Jackson is the founding director of Center of Spiritual Light, a community services organization which provides resources for practical spirituality to individuals and organizations to enhance their impactful transformation. She is a prolific author, leadership coach, and international change agent. She holds a PhD in Christian social ethics, M. Divinity. She's a JD and BA in psychology and sociology. She's the author of 5 books, including Love Like You've Never Been Hurt and Still Got Game. Welcome, my wonderful friend, Dr. Carrie Jackson.
Thank you, Anne. I'm glad to be here with you.
I'm so glad you're here, and this is such an important topic for us to talk about because I think we see this a lot. Not only are lawyers dealing with fear-based decisions by their clients or the people that they're representing, but they themselves might deal with it as well. So great topic for us to focus on. Now, your work focuses on a cross-section of leaders from business, community, spiritual, and government sectors. What do these leaders have in common?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is that leaders are expected to know more than they know, and more than what is often humanly possible for us to know. And in that, they're also expected to make comprehensive decisions that impact lots of people, but often relying on incomplete information. So it's, as a leader, one is often set up in a situation where you don't know all of the moving parts, but expected to act as if you do. And many of us are very effective in doing the kinds of things we do. You know, we think quickly, and, you know, leaders have to think quickly and be able to respond to lots of moving parts at the same time, and not being able to impact some of those or most of those parts. And so it's a situation as a leader where people, I think, are more effective when they invite the input, the ideas, expertise of many. But if the leader's ego is such that he or she feels, you know, but I'm supposed to know it, then odds are they're not going to be making the best decisions.
That's a really interesting perspective, and frankly, it's something that we see with a lot of lawyers, unfortunately, where they feel like, you know, we are in a place of trust, and we feel like we're supposed to know the answer and not necessarily go out there and check for it. So really, I think your work is applicable to our population. Now, much of your work with leaders focuses on strategies for breaking through anxiety. Why is that such an important focus?
Anxiety is like static to the ear, and it's like fog to the sight. And often when people are needing to make sharp decisions and there's anxiety that's clouding their vision, clouding their perception, then the result is the decisions that are made are not only short-sighted, but they often also bring long-term adverse consequences. And that's the thing that anxiety does. It clouds how we hear, it clouds how we see, it clouds our perception. And so being able to recognize the anxiety and knowing how to manage and work through it is really critical to making the kinds of decisions that are going to be most favorable. And that's why I really focus on that.
That makes a lot of sense. I remember once hearing that when you have fear or anxiety, it's as if you can't access your cognitive part of the brain.
Very, very true. Anxiety, and I use that word because some people don't like the word fear. Who was it, Churchill, who said there's nothing to fear but fear itself? Because that is something to be concerned about because of the kinds of adverse impacts that it can bring to us. And it's really critical that most of us, when we're leaders and we're paid to know things, that when the anxiety gets stirred up, it's difficult for us to acknowledge it because, you know, emotionally we feel that's really not okay to feel that anxiety stirring. It's not okay. And so the thing that we say is not okay, then we won't allow ourselves to see it. And if we don't recognize it, then we're not able to manage it. And that becomes this kind of slippery slope into total ineffectiveness ultimately.
Now, what about, give us some examples of adverse impacts stemming from these anxiety-based decisions or this slippery slope, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, well, in one context, in business context, we've had a very recent example within the past 8 years of the decision to get more money, get higher results for shareholders, et cetera, that led to some banking decisions, especially as it relates to homeowner loans for people who really weren't qualifying and at rates that really were not sustainable. And that has had huge impact not only on the U.S. economy, but because the U.S. economy intersects with national economies around the world, there's really been this ripple effect. And that really started from this anxiety, we got to make more money. And in our society, that is a very, very strong anxiety that drives so many decisions. And ultimately, there's going to be a crash. And we see those kinds of things happening. Militarily, we saw after the World Trade Center attack this rush to Iraq for weapons of mass destruction, and you know, so that spiraled into the last 14 years of not only incredible expense to the financial expense to the U.S., which of course has ripple effect, because then there are some things that, because so many dollars have been put into defense, other kinds of things that we've needed to have a healthy and strong country, then resources have not been put there. So those kinds of anxiety-based decisions that happen in a moment often have generational impact. And a third example I'll cite is the tendency in this country toward racial profiling, which continues to have the impact not only on individuals who are profiled, black and brown individuals in particular who are profiled, but then there's the backlash toward the police and then in the disruption in communities and on and on and on. So those are the kinds of things cutting across disciplines and across areas, you know, fields that really impact all of us.
Wow, that's really, you know, thank you for sharing all those examples. And the first one that you shared about the financial issue, one of the things that made me think about is some of the challenges that we've been seeing in law firms lately, especially the larger law firms where there used to be a very big drive for more billable hours. And now we're starting to see a crash within the legal field where from, you know, an implosion and an explosion where the clients are saying, no, you know, we're not paying anymore or we're not paying that much for someone that's in training, and the young generation of lawyers saying, nope, we want life. We don't want to, you know, work our till we die, basically.
Yeah.
Because
we're so driven by money, our society has socialized so many of us to be driven by money, that the kinds of choices people are making not only impact in the workplace, but then they also impact in people's personal lives as well. And there are the realities of people working longer hours and then their marriages crash, or they don't have healthy relationships with their children, or their physical bodies can't sustain that. And so it's the anxiety of, I've got to outperform the next one, and I've got to do better than I did last year. It's those kinds of anxieties that can drive any individual to having a life that is really less than desirable, ultimately, because even after getting the money, then there's what else is there in life that
true,
is more sustainable
true.
For a person's wholeness and happiness, which then is also important to being able to perform well professionally. If those other things in life aren't there to support the wholeness, then people are not as likely to perform well in their professions.
That's absolutely true. We see it all the time. And, you know, so let's talk about the flip side. If lawyers, and I say leaders and lawyers at the same time, because many people do turn to lawyers for leadership, or, you know, many lawyers do end up running for politics and so forth. So if we're not supposed to make anxiety-based decisions, how can we make effective decisions?
Well, there's three C's that I think are very important: competence, courage, and compassion. Generally, we focus almost exclusively on competence. I think that is critical. People need to know their game. They need to be at the top of their game, have the expertise in whatever their particular field is. But then there is also the importance of courage, and by that I mean responsible risk-taking. Some people take huge risks, and it's not courage that is really driving it. It is the anxiety to outperform other people. That's not quite the same thing as courage. Courage that I'm talking about is being able to recognize that the decision might not be what the majority go with, but knowing that that is ultimately the one that's the decision that's going to serve the most people in the best and highest ways. That takes courage because it is often going against the grain. And the third is compassion, and that is in the midst of all of the decisions, not leaving out, well, how is this going to affect people's lives? And I cite the anxiety about the financial industry and the homeowner loans, et cetera, et cetera. No real thinking about, well, how does this affect people's lives? And only a focus on a small number of shareholders, while there were millions of other people who were impacted by those decisions. And so that's why I think it requires not only the competence, you know, being the best at doing whatever the work is, but also the courage to go against the grain if that is what is needed in a situation, and the compassion, and the three intersect wonderfully. And if any one of those is missing, then the decisions that are made are not likely to have the best results over the long term, even if they might have some fairly good results in the short term for a few people. But I'm when I'm talking about decision making, I'm looking at long term and benefiting the most people.
Really sustainable decision making is what I'm hearing from you.
Yes.
Now, what about, you know, you mentioned as you were explaining courage, the second C, that there's a difference between the anxiety-based decision, you know, to take action versus one that's truly courageous. How can leaders and other decision makers and lawyers be able to identify when their thought processes are shaped or guided by their fears or the fears of others?
One key thing is whether or not there is willingness to hear and entertain alternative approaches and solutions. When any of us is less able to say, hey, let me hear some other ideas, and if we're less likely to say, so what might be some possible consequences? If we're not able to take even a short time, because often some decisions we don't have the luxury of days or weeks or even hours at times, but sometimes we have to make quick decisions. But even in those moments, there ought to be taking some time to weigh some other alternatives, some other approaches, to weigh what might be some of the consequences. And the language has come into our, or I'll say the term of art has come into common idiomatic expression, you know, collateral damage. It's a military term. And we've often made decisions knowing that there's some collateral damage, but we don't want to entertain what it might be and what might be the short-term and long-term consequences as it relates to collateral damage. And so if there's an unwillingness to look at those kinds of things, the alternatives, the approaches, the consequences, then odds are it's a very anxiety-based decision-making process that's engaged. Because anxiety gets locked in. It locks us in. Got to do this right now. And when we're operating from a less anxious place, then we're more able to entertain some other ideas, alternatives, solutions, et cetera.
So really noticing if you are willing to compromise or willing to see alternatives, that's one key way to identify when you're that if you're not doing that you are guided by some kind of fear-based decision. Is that accurate?
And I'm glad you used the word compromise. Sometimes the decision is not a compromise decision, but it's made, though, after looking at these alternatives. It's a more comprehensively driven decision. And we can't get to comprehensive decision making unless we've taken even a few minutes to weigh some of those other possibilities.
That's really important. I can see the difference now. You know, I can see how it is a comprehensive solution instead of one that's just going in with a compromise, so that makes sense. Now, how can decision makers help quiet the anxieties and fears of others who tend to become more anxious resulting from key, perhaps unfavorable decisions that they once made?
Thank you for that. I think that's such an important question. Many of us, even as leaders, may want to please people and not recognize that that's something that impacts us, because we think we're making a rationally based decision and have convinced ourselves, oh, you know, there's no emotionality in my decision, and many of us look down upon anything that appears to be emotional, when to be human is to be rational and emotional and a whole bunch of other things too. And so when I'm talking about comprehensive decision making, it is about bringing all of who we are in a conscious and intentional way to the process. So one of the things is to recognize other people's anxiety. So when they're pushing back, and pushing back really hard, that's a signal that they're feeling really anxious. Of course, they're probably not going to use that language. They'll probably be more likely to say, but your decision is wrong, and that doesn't make any sense, and have all of these wonderfully defensible reasons regarding their own position. So one of the ways to help allay that, or at least quiet it for others, is to recognize that their own emotionality, their own anxiety and fear has kicked in, and to speak to that. Not say, hey man or hey woman, you're just scared, and try to dismiss it, because that's only going to piss them off, right? But rather to really look at, so if this is what I hear you saying, and summarize that as quickly as possible. So tell me what's your concern about this? And really honor and validate that. And there might be something really rich in the anxiety that the person is bringing that can then get factored into the decision. It might be something that people can then say, oh, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So how about we do this? So then people are feeling heard, feeling validated. Their concern, their anxiety, their fear is being honored, again, without any language that says, oh, you're scared, and I'm going to give you this bone to quiet you, you know, because that's not the perspective to bring at all. But to really hear the fear and be able to think then in terms of some strategies that incorporate that broad base of issues, because what that person may be raising, that particular anxiety, might be something that someone else in that system, in that chain, might share that particular anxiety. And so the more that can be spoken to in ways that help people know that they're being honored, and you come up with a much more comprehensive result. A second thing is to think about people throughout history who have made unpopular decisions that ultimately were really in the best interest of the masses. And I think about people like Abraham Lincoln. He happens to be one of my favorite, not because he was a perfect person, but he took some huge risks, and talk about competence, courage, and compassion in terms of his competence as an attorney and politician, as a negotiator. He really brought those things as he dealt with his particular constituencies. And he also had the courage to make a decision or make a series of decisions that were not very popular with many folks. And it was driven by both his compassion for slaves in the U.S. and his vision for a United States, for a nation that was really not divided in the ways that things were in that era. And so each of us has someone in our own personal history or in national history, world history, who is a guide to us, or a role model for how to bring those three C's, the competence, courage, and compassion, in ways that as you're dealing with people who are anxious or people who are afraid that they're going to lose something. And that's why I cite Lincoln, because much of the fear was that we're going to lose the way of life that we have had. And even whites in the South who were not benefited by the system of chattel slavery, there was a way of life that they had bought into that they were convinced was to their best interest. And so sometimes to understand what people's what their narratives are, the things that they are afraid they will be losing by decision X, is really important. Understand what they feel they'll be losing. That's why I say decisions are not merely rational, because you've got to understand some of the emotionality and be able to speak to that and do it in a way and in a language that people can hear. So you don't talk about their emotionality, but you're still speaking to it in ways that really feel that they honor them. And so having people, in your own personal history or world history, who have made those kinds of decisions that might have been unpopular or made decisions in a context where people's anxieties were stirred up very high. And what are some of the strategies that you saw them use and how you might bring those into your own context? And each of us has some of those people, but that's why the competence is critical. But competence not only in terms of the law, knowing that, but also competence in people skills.
That's really well said, and very, it's such a nuanced but important understanding, because it's competence of emotional intelligence as well.
Yes, yes.
So
emotional intelligence, indeed.
We're almost out of time, so I wanted to ask you two more questions. First, what are some specific strategies that can help rectify the impacts of anxiety-based decisions?
So once those decisions are made, one of the things is then to do a debrief, really look at where were the critical points where we went left when perhaps we it would have served best if we had gone right, or if we went even northwest. And I want to cite this as an example. In most sports that involve some kind of ball, whether it is golf or tennis or bowling or what, often it's a hairpin difference that impacts the extent to which we are successful in reaching our goal. And usually in the debrief, we can find we didn't need to make a huge difference. Now, while the result out there is huge, from the point where we're hitting the ball or throwing that ball, whatever, usually it's just a little slight difference, hairpin difference that we need to make. And so doing those kinds of debriefs to assess where might we have adjusted just a tad that would, based on the trajectory, take us a very, very different place from where we landed. When we do those kinds of debriefs, inherent in them is also some wisdom and some insight about how to address the impacts that have happened as a result of anxiety-based decisions. And getting that kind of insight then will help make corrective action with the decisions that have already been made. That debrief is critical, because generally what people do is make one anxiety-based decision after another, and we end up in a greater mess than we were to start with. So doing that debrief and knowing what that hairpin difference is very, very important.
That's fantastic advice about debriefing. We are out of time, Dr. Carey. So if you could share with our listeners how they can reach you, your website or any other contact information you'd like to share, and also share with them a little bit about how they can find out more about your forgiveness tour.
Yes. To reach me, I have two websites. One is centerofspirituallight.org, centerofspirituallight.org, where we focus our work with leaders, really helping leaders do what they do more effectively. And the other is drcarryjackson.com. The forgiveness tour, we're going around the country helping people recognize the power of forgiveness and how it can change their lives, because when we don't forgive, it impacts decisions that we make going forward. Some emotionality in there.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. You've been so brilliant and wise and shared such great information today, and I'm definitely taking away confidence, courage, and compassion for today.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So, listeners, let's keep this conversation going. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. You can find everything on our website, www.esquirecoaching.com. Next episode, we'll be talking with Maria Simon, senior partner at the Geller Law Group, about her innovative way of structuring her law firm. Until then, be well, everyone.